will help.
Radio Borders Youth Association. Good afternoon, everyone. You are listening to the sound of universal compassion. Today, 17th of September, we will continue listening to Tenzin's previous program with the book Way of Life by Shanti Davies. Please enjoy.
This show is brought to you by the Buddhist Youth Association every Sunday, bringing Buddhism to the community of the Waikato. We also give away a range of free English or Chinese Buddhism books, MP3, or tapes on Buddhism. If you'd like one, please send a letter with $3 worth of stamps in an envelope to P.O. Box 82146, Highland Park, Howick, Auckland. Or you can phone 09271-3377. Buddhist Youth Association. Respectful, beneficial, empowering. Hello and welcome once more to this series of radio programs on the Buddhist approach to anger and its antidote, patience. Of course, in Buddhism, anger is counted as the very worst of the negative emotions, so we have to be very wary of its arisal in our minds. It can so easily make us say and do things we really regret later. It makes people around us unhappy, but even worse, it lays imprints on our minds which lead to great suffering in the future. This is what His Holiness the Dalai Lama had to say about negative emotions such as anger. In Buddhism, any thought, feeling, or mental state that undermines our peace of mind from within, all negative thoughts and emotions such as anger, pride, lust, greed, envy, and so on, are considered to be afflictions. Far from recognizing their destructive potential and challenging them, we often nurture and reinforce them. But their nature is wholly destructive. They are the very source of unethical conduct. And then he continues, anger may seem to offer an energetic way of getting things done, but such a perception of the world is misguided. The only certainty about anger and hatred is that they are destructive. No good ever comes of them. If we live our lives continually motivated by anger and hatred, even our physical health deteriorates. On the other hand, people who remain calm and open-minded, motivated by compassion, are mentally free of anxiety and physically healthy. At a time when people are so conscious of maintaining their physical health by controlling their diets, exercising and so forth, it makes sense to try to cultivate the corresponding positive mental attitudes too. So far, I've mentioned how a positive outlook can affect an individual. It's also true that the more compassionate a society, the happier its members will be. The development of human society is based entirely on people helping each other. Every individual has a responsibility to help guide the community in the right direction, and we must each assume that responsibility. If we lose this essential humanity that is our foundation, society as a whole will collapse. What point will there then be in pursuing material improvement, and from whom can we demand our rights? Action motivated by compassion and responsibility will ultimately bring good results. Anger and jealousy may be effective in the short term, but will ultimately bring us only trouble. And those are His Holiness's words. Because so much of the world often seems to be motivated by aggression, it makes sense for us to find some way to control our own anger, and if possible, to transform it into something much more useful, like patience or compassion. Some time ago, I idly scrolled through the message board on the website Trade Me, just to have a look at what people were saying to each other. Mostly people were friendly and sympathetic, wanting to help those who were having difficulties of various kinds. However, one person with a very large chip on their shoulder seemed to take pleasure in making some very cutting remarks, sometimes even seeming to rejoice in others' misfortunes. It was interesting to note how everyone else in the community rejected this person. And I think he or she, the person posed as a woman, but maybe they were just disguising themselves, may eventually have been voted off the site. This is just a simple, perhaps rather mundane example, but it does show how, if we allow anger to rule our lives, it makes so many people unhappy and will eventually bring us everything we don't want. Perhaps that person voted off will blame everyone else, refusing to accept that it was their own anger and nastiness that got them rejected. It would have been even worse though if they consciously decided to be provocatively nasty. From a Buddhist point of view, making a conscious decision to do something, carrying it out, and then rejoicing in it at the end is a complete karma that will be the spur for a coming rebirth. Imagine having that full aggressive karma on our mind and perhaps practicing it again and again. How will we not land up in a very unpleasant situation when that karma ripens? So it really does make sense to try and develop patience and compassion as much as we can. Not only will they help us now, but with those positive habits on our mind streams, we will be so much happier in the future. And of course, there is no need to mention how much happier everyone around us will remain. Now, the text we've been following, Shantideva's A Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life, is a manual, how to transform our lives. In the sixth chapter, it specifically aims at anger and extensively demonstrates how to change our thinking to develop patience in every situation. I'd like to just briefly run over what we've covered so far in the last program, but before we go any further, let's set our motivation for this program. As I've said before, in terms of karma, motivation is the most important part of any action. And the best motivation is to become enlightened, to be of the greatest benefit we can to all other sentient beings. Why is this the best motivation? Well, because the object, all sentient beings, is so vast. Even on this planet, we have countless beings. When you think about all the people, animals, insects, reptiles, fish, and birds. But we are only one planet in one universe of many. The total population of our Earth will have to be multiplied by millions many times over to get just the number of beings in our own universe, according to Buddhist cosmology. Never mind all the other universes. So we can see, having a motivation to benefit all those beings is very vast. So let's try to have that motivation for this program. But if it seems too much, at least set a motivation no smaller than to gain liberation for yourself. Every other motivation is of too limited a scope. Thank you. Now, last week we spoke about slander and how to react when it's directed against us. Of course, in normal circumstances, we usually get angry and head back. But Shantideva gives us another way to react. He says, look at the reasons for the angry reaction and see if they are valid or not. See if another way of reacting will be more helpful in the situation. So if we think we are justified in hitting back because we think our reputation will suffer and other people will lose confidence in us, why don't we get angry when someone else is slandered? Because similarly, they will lose others' confidence. Or if we have the idea that it's okay to react to slander with anger because we think the slanderer is karmically harming themselves, again, why don't we get angry when they slander someone else? They're still harming themselves, but we don't get irritated with them then. And if we say, well, the other people this person is slandering have nothing to do with me, it's all due to other factors I know nothing about, we must apply the same logic when we are slandered. The slanderer is under the power of afflictive emotion, which is another factor. So I shouldn't get angry with the slanderer. I should get angry with the afflictive emotion. Even if people slander the things we hold dear, like the Buddha, holy beings and objects, we have no need to get angry. Shantideva points out that the great beings and holy objects don't take any notice of such slander, so why should we get all upset? Oh, that's very well, you might say. But what about when someone slanders my family or friends? They will be affected, so I should do something about it. Shantideva points out that karmically your family and friends created the causes for that to happen to them, so they are at least partly at fault. As that is their karma, we have to be careful about reacting angrily and causing a lot more negative karma out of a false sense of loyalty. Of course, it is obvious that defending friends and family from a perceived slight can lead to generations of family feuds and endless sorrow. So it's much better to look at the slight in a more forgiving light and not get caught up in anger. Then Shantideva goes on to point out that we get hurt by both animate beings and inanimate things, and usually we don't get angry with inanimate things. Okay, I did say usually. I know some people can get really hacked off if their car breaks down, for instance, or the toaster stops working. But that kind of anger is really nonsensical. All it does is make us unhappy and doesn't make the car or the toaster work again. Usually people realize this, though. But when someone else makes us angry, we are all too ready to let them know all about it. Shanti Davis says, basically, the car broke down because of other factors, not just because it was trying to hack you off. And similarly, the other person is being a pain because of other factors, not because they are really trying to make you angry. They're under the influence of negative emotion, just as the car or the toaster are under the influence of impermanence and change. So why do we look at the two differently? We would do much better to see both as under the control of other factors and develop patience. If the other person is doing something to harm oneself or one's friends out of ignorance of the karmic consequences, and then we react angrily under the same ignorance, who's more at fault? You can't point the finger at only one person in the situation. Both are at fault for being under the power of ignorance. We can't say, for instance, "Oh, I wasn't doing anything. He just came and harmed me out of the blue." If someone is making us angry, it is only because we created the cause for that to happen in the past. As His Holiness says, ultimately we are responsible for the situation, because it would not have arisen if we had not created the karmic cause for it. And if that is true, we have no reason to blame the person who is now bringing us harm. It would be better to develop patience, so that I don't have to go through the whole miserable experience, or much worse, in the future. So, Shantideva concludes in verse 69 of the text, "This I see, and therefore come what may, I'll hold fast to the virtuous path, and foster in the hearts of all an attitude of mutual love." We only develop anger towards others because we have such strong attachment to ourselves and what we perceive as ours: our family, our friends, our possessions, our country, our side. It's a natural mechanism to latch onto things and people that validate us, and then to act protectively towards them, whether they're in the right or not. It might be an instinctive response we've generated over countless eons of practice from lifetime to lifetime, but that doesn't change the fact that if we look closely, we can see how that attachment brings us nothing but pain and misery. We've been in countless arguments, disputes, and wars through just that cause. But up to now, we've never looked closely at the situation. We've just blindly followed our instincts and whatever our compatriots, including our relatives and friends, tell us is right. It is possible to conquer that very harmful attachment, though, and to develop real love and compassion, not only for those closest to us, but for all beings indiscriminately. Okay, so it's not easy. But it can be done if we are sick enough of living in the kind of violent or semi-violent situation we always seem to find ourselves in. One way of looking at others is to remember that countless times in past lives they've been our mothers and fathers and have been extremely kind to us. We just have to think how really indescribably kind our parents were to bring us up in this life, making sure we had enough food, clothes, medicines, and so on, so that we never really had to suffer. But that is only in this life. In countless previous lives, we've had parents who were kind to us, just like the parents of this life. And all those parents were different. So we cannot point to one being and say, "That being has never been my mother or father." A verse in a text called The Four Mindfulnesses by the 7th Dalai Lama explains this very well. "In the prison of the suffering of limitless cyclic existence, wander the six types of sentient beings bereft of happiness. Fathers and mothers who protected you with kindness are there. Forsaking desire and hatred, cultivate endearment and compassion. Not letting your mind stray, place it within compassion. Make your attention unforgetful, maintain it within compassion." If we can remember all the time that even though we may not recognize each other now, all the beings we come across every day have at some stage been our very dear parents, and also that they are caught in the huge samsaric net of suffering, then we can generate genuine compassion and kindness for them. The more we can remember this, the more our antagonism will diminish, and we will be able to become more and more peaceful and loving towards others. Most of the Easterners I know come from societies that stress the importance of parents for children. Of all people, children must pay most respect to their parents, even to the extent of allowing their parents to make life decisions for them. For instance, as you probably know, it is still fairly common in India and other Eastern countries for parents to decide who their children will marry. For many Westerners, however, parents can be among the most troublesome people around. In his poem, Parents, William Meredith touches on the ambivalent attitudes we have to our parents and how we become them in this endless cycle of life and death. He writes, "What it must be like to be an angel or a squirrel, we can imagine sooner. The last time we go to bed good, they are there lying about darkness. They dandle us once too often, these friends who become our enemies. Suddenly one day, their juniors are as old as we yearn to be. They get wrinkles where it is better smooth, odd coughs and smells. It is grotesque how they go on loving us, we go on loving them. The effrontery, barely imaginable, of having caused us, and of how. Their lives, surely we can do better than that. This goes on for a long time. Everything they do is wrong, and the worst thing, they all do it, is to die, taking with them the last explanation how we came out of the wet sea or wherever they got us from, taking the last link of that chain with them. Father, mother, we cry, wrinkling, to our uncomprehending children and grandchildren. And we may blame our parents for the difficulties we face in life, even though in many respects it is due to them that we are still alive and kicking. And, of course, because we've lived so long and closely with them, our parents and families know well how to push our buttons. We Westerners find it irksome when our parents still treat us like children, even after we have spouses and children of our own. So it's easy to let our frustrations with them become the touchstone of our relationships. Pema Chodron has a neat answer to preventing this. In her commentary to Shantideva's verses, she has this anecdote to tell. The Lama she writes about, Trungpa Rinpoche, is a very highly respected and realized monk in the Tibetan Kagyu tradition. And this is what she writes. I once asked Trungpa Rinpoche how to work with anger towards my mother. He told me I should experiment for a while with resenting her and see how it felt. Then I should remember any kindness she showed me as a child and try appreciating her for a week or two. In the end, I could make my own decision about which attitude to cultivate for the rest of my life. It's an interesting experiment, and perhaps one we could try when our parents seem most exasperating. Or, as quite a contrast to William Meredith's poem, we can contemplate another by a young girl named Samara. The poem is called My Peeps. It goes like this. You may see me as normal, but you would never guess that my family is weird, maybe even strange. And though we may seem happy and chipper even, we're not the same. My brother, yes, is cute, but revolting too. My sister is pretty, but really should be in a zoo. My parents are lovable and kind of old, but when it comes to jokes, they shouldn't be so bold. So I ask you, please, don't ridicule when they come outside, 'cause living with them all my life, I walk with them with pride. And now let's get back to Shantideva's verses. In the last program, we got up to verse 71. And in the next two stanzas, Shantideva indicates how it's better to suffer some discomfort in conquering anger than allowing it to land us up in difficult states in the future. Remember that one of the main causes for a hellish experience is anger. So Shantideva says, "Is not a man relieved when, though condemned to death, he's freed, his hand cut off in ransom for his life? Enduring likewise merely human ills, am I not happy to avoid the pains of hell? If pains of even this, my present life, are now beyond my strength to bear, why do I not overthrow my anger, cause of future sorrow, in infernal torment?" Now, if you think about it, if someone harms us and we get angry, that anger doesn't help the situation. It doesn't protect us from the harm we have already experienced and only becomes a cause for a lot of suffering in the future. An incident of road rage that I once read about in the newspaper is a classic example. One driver took exception to the way another passed him on the motorway. So he chased after the other car and cursed and swore at the fellow driving it. That driver also got angry and yelled back. Soon the cars were chasing each other all over the motorway until they had to stop, at which point both drivers got out of their cars and laid into each other with wheel braces. Both landed up in hospital with head injuries and both were charged by the police. You have to shake your head at such stupidity. The initial incident was one car passing another, nothing very important, even if it was a bit close or something. But by the time the incident had come to an end, two people were hospitalized with head injuries and were facing court appearances and quite possibly large fines and other punishments. And that's not to mention the karmic result of the anger, which could be something a lot more unpleasant than a bleeding head and a traffic fine. It would have also easily been avoided if the drivers had just practiced a little bit of patience. Now, you could say it's difficult to be patient on those days when everything seems to be going against you. But Shantideva likens such situations to a man facing the death penalty who's allowed to have a hand cut off instead. Of course, the loss of a hand is relatively minor compared to the loss of one's life. And similarly, if we can put up with difficulties in this life with patience, we will avoid much greater difficulties we could inevitably face in coming lives by now catering to our anger. His Holiness writes in A Flash of Lightning in the Dark of Night, "When we have the chance to purify our great suffering by enduring a slight injury, we should accept it. If unable to bear insults, we get angry, we are only creating worse suffering for the future. Difficult though it may be, we should try instead to broaden our perspective and not retaliate. We have been and still are going through endless suffering without deriving any benefit whatsoever from it. Now that we have promised to be good-hearted, we should try not to get angry when others insult us. Being patient might not be easy. It requires considerable concentration. But the result we achieve by enduring these difficulties will be sublime. That is something to be happy about." And in another commentary, His Holiness suggests that we can use a troublesome situation to make progress in our spiritual path. For instance, realizing that the situation came about through our negative karma, we can make the aspiration, "Through this suffering, may I be able to purify my negativities committed in the past." We take on and accept the discomfort for the very purpose of purifying our negative karma, so we can gain realizations on the path more quickly. Can you see that if we make such an aspiration, it is much easier to regard the person harming us with some friendliness and without anger? That person is, after all, helping us to achieve what we really want to do. Okay, so the method might be a little rough and uncomfortable, but it will really help our spiritual practice. But His Holiness suggests an even more powerful prayer that cannot fail to create a lot of positive potential. He says we could try to pray, "May my undergoing this hardship substitute for all similar types of hardships that sentient beings may have to undergo. May I, by experiencing this, be able to save all other sentient beings from having to undergo the same suffering." So here, we not only take on our own hardships and suffering, but we use them to take on the suffering of others as well. In the short term, it really helps. Say, for instance, we get into an argument. Then afterwards, it's very easy to continue feeling indignant and bitter and complaining about how angry and upset we are. The effect of that is just to make the situation seem much worse than it really is, and our suffering increases exponentially. However, if we are able to practice patience thinking, "May I, by experiencing these difficulties, be able to help other people and save others who may have to go through the same experience," our mind is not given the opportunity to get into that tormented state, and so we suffer much less. As His Holiness says, in fact, one can see it as a kind of privilege. One can see it as an opportunity and in fact be joyful because of this particular experience which has made one's life richer. His Holiness makes another good point in his commentary. He says in situations of hardship and suffering, we shouldn't just sit back and say, "Oh, it's just my karma, there's nothing I can do about it." We can take an active role in what happens. It may be our karma, but how we react to it will determine what happens to us in the future. His Holiness is quite firm in saying that karma is not a something passive that we just have to give in to. He says, if we understand the concept of karma properly, we will understand that karma means action, and it's a very active process. When we talk of karma or action, it entails action committed by an agent, in this case, oneself in the past. So what type of future will come about, to a large extent, lies within one's own hands and can be determined by the initiatives that one takes now. Not only that, but karma should not be understood in terms of a passive, static kind of force, but rather in terms of an active process. This indicates there's an important role for the individual agent to play in determining the karmic process. So we too can take adverse circumstances into our own hands and use them to create very positive results for ourselves in the future. Thich Nhat Hanh, in his book Peace is Every Step, describes taking an active role against anger like this. Anger is an unpleasant feeling. It's like a blazing flame that burns up our self-control and causes us to say and do things that we regret later. When someone is angry, we can see clearly that he or she is abiding in hell. Anger and hatred are the materials from which hell is made. A mind without anger is cool, fresh, and sane. The absence of anger is the basis of real happiness, the basis of love and compassion. When our anger is placed under the lamp of mindfulness, it immediately begins to lose some of its destructive nature. If we follow our breathing closely, while we identify and mindfully observe our anger, it can no longer monopolize our consciousness. Awareness can be called upon to be a companion for our anger. Our awareness of our anger does not suppress it or drive it out. It just looks after it. This is a very important principle. Mindfulness is not a judge. It is more like an older sister looking after and comforting her younger sister in an affectionate and caring way. We can concentrate on our breathing in order to maintain this mindfulness and know ourselves fully. When we are angry, we are not usually inclined to return to ourselves. We want to think about the person who's making us angry, to think about his hateful aspects, his rudeness, dishonesty, cruelty, maliciousness, and so on. The more we think about him, listen to him, or look at him, the more our anger flares. His dishonesty and hatefulness may be real, imaginary, or exaggerated, but in fact, the root of the problem is the anger itself. And we have to come back and look first of all inside ourselves. It is best if we do not listen to or look at the person who is the cause of our anger. Like a fireman, we have to pour water on the blaze first and not waste time looking for the one who set the house on fire. And now I will leave you with those thoughts, for we've come to the end of the program. Please take a moment to dedicate any positive potential we've accumulated to the enlightenment of all sentient beings. Thank you. I hope you've enjoyed the program and you will join me again next week. May everything go well for you in the next 7 days. Goodbye. This show is brought to you by the Buddhist Youth Association every Sunday, bringing Buddhism to the community of the Waikato. We also give away a range of free English or Chinese Buddhism books, MP3, or tapes on Buddhism. If you'd like one, please send a letter with $3 worth of stamps in an envelope to P.O. Box 82146, Highland Park, Howick, Auckland. Or you can phone 09271-3377. Buddhist Youth Association. Respectful. Beneficial. Empowering.